Okay, so we'll try to, like I said, I'm already fuzzy about what we discussed last week, but we touched on the significance of the matzah, and now I want to take it to the next level, the Ezes Hashem, call it the beyond the pshat level of matzah. The beyond the pshat level of matzah. Now, here I want to say something. In general, my chinuch and my general approach is to really try to focus on the depth of simple understanding, the depth of the straightforward inyanim, whatever area it is we're talking about, and not to get more into symbolism or more abstract or esoteric elements of it. However, when it comes to the matzah, Chazal already opened that door in a very, very strong way. And sometimes it's important to realize when you hear things that are more like symbolic rather than pshat, you have to differentiate between something that's an idea of a specific sefer, which is could be very chashuv, but it's an original specific idea. And sometimes you have things that are a bit on the symbolic level, but they're across the board. You'll see them in all of the early Sfarim, which makes you understand that these aren't novel ideas, but rather, call it Kabbalah, whatever it is, coming from Chazal, these are the staple understandings of what's really behind this. This is not someone's novel insight, but rather, this is the staple understanding just beyond the Pshat level. There is such a thing, right? So this is where I want to go now with the matzah. And we'll depending on the time, we'll see about tying it into the Korban Pesach. The matzah, we know that in the Beis HaMikdash, by and large, all bread was matzah. There were very specific instances of chametz. They didn't go on the Mizbeach. They never went on the Mizbeach.
Showbread.
That was matzah. It was thick matzah. Yep, the lechem apanim was not chametz.
Don't show us.
You know why? You know why? We picture the matzah that we know is this thin. Essentially, matzah is dough that didn't rise. Essentially, you can take a dough like this. If you can bake it in a hot enough oven, it'll be called matzah. Now, we have a chumrah that we don't bake matzah thicker than a tefach. Now, know how far we are from that in practice. In practice, we're so far from that. Whatever the case is, theoretically, you take a dough this big, as long as you can ensure that it gets fully baked. I don't know how you do that, but as long as you can ensure that it gets baked through and through, matzah does not have to be thin. We do it that way because it makes sense, because it would be very tough to do it otherwise. But lechem apanim, as thick as you saw it in the pictures, was matzah, as in it wasn't chametz. It wasn't chametz. You know, the Sfaradim use thicker pita-like matzahs. So the lechem apanim was not chametz. The menachos that the kohanim all ate with all the names that they were called chalas. You don't think of chalas as you think of chalas as chametz, but the chalas of the lechem of the menachos, they were matzah. Matzah again, matzah in terms of not chametz. They probably did not look like our matzahs, but they weren't chametz. They were all matzah in terms of the halacha. The menachos that they then actually burnt on the mizbeach, that was all matzah. There were two karbonis that involved chametz. Those were real exceptions to the rule. One of the four types of breads that came along with the Torah was chametz, and the shtei alechem of Shavuos. But as a rule, the bread of the Beis HaMikdash, the bread of the Kohanim, was matzah.
One.
Why? Oh, so this is where I want to go, and then we'll understand how it's relevant to us also. And this is something that the that again is a yesod that we see across the board, that matzah is aligned with our spirituality rather than our physicality and our material level. And this is expressed, the same point is expressed from all directions by the Kadmainim, Ramchal, the Maharal, the Rashba, the Shlomo. And on and on and on. What's the idea? The idea is like this. We'll try to say it in a way that'll bring it home. Here's how the Ramchal says it.
You know,
The Ramchal
playing
says
the magnifiers.
that
I mean, yeah, but if they come, I'm putting this.
Ramchal says that what is matzah? What is chametz? Chametz is matzah is in its pure form. You take the flour, water, dough, basic as is, no frills, you bake it, right? But as a physical human being, that's not so geschmack. That's not so tasty. That's not so savory. And therefore, we let it rise until it gains some more material quality. We rise until it gains some more material quality. So matzah is at the level where we have no need for that. We aren't in that material world. We need to keep ourselves alive, and we don't need anything more than that. Chametz is, we are a part of the material world. We need that material element to it, and therefore we eat chametz. Now, the Rashba, in his Perush in the Haggadah, takes it a step further, and he says it as follows. I'll say in parentheses, I'm quoting the Rashba, even though I'm not totally sure about it. There's a very chashuv Perush in the Haggadah that there's debate until today who authored it. It's either the Rashba or Rabbi Yosef Giktilia, which is a less familiar name, but he was one of the very great names in the history of Kabbalah. So whether it's the Rashba, who was also one of the famous transmitters of Kabbalah, or it's Rabbi Yosef Giktilia, we're talking about a very, very deep and chashuva Pirush Kadmon in the Haggadah. So I'm just going to call it the Rashba just because it's more familiar and shorter. So whatever the case is, he says, he takes it a step further, and he says that the chametz essentially is the dough spoiling.
The one.
The dough spoiling.
Oh.
Spoiling, right? That's the process. It ferments. Just like what do we call chametz when it comes to wine? What's chametz? What's the root of chametz? Chametz, vinegar, spoiled wine. So essentially, chametz dough is also spoiled the dough that the bacteria started setting in. It fermented, it went bad. Just what it happens to be that it tastes better. Right? But in terms of the materials themselves, this is spoiled material. And he says something very deep. He says something very deep. He says, well, so if so, why, as far as we're concerned, it's a higher quality. As far as we're concerned, it tastes better. He says, you know why? Don't get offended. He says, because we're also spoiled it. Meaning, he says, we were originally pure neshama. And then Hashem came and mixed in soil. Mixed in soil. He says the matzah in its pure state, the unruined matzah, is what is appropriate for the person in the pure state without the ruination of the material physical element. Let me just finish rounding out the point. Whereas Hashem said, no, but that's not where I want you in a general way. I do want you to be a material physical being because that's the whole idea. So I am ruining you to an effect. I'm ruining you for a very great purpose. For a very great purpose. You're not going to be the sublime being you are as a pure neshama, but that's the purpose of making the neshama even greater. But lemaisa, we now have those physical ingredients that pulled down our level. And that's why we can't appreciate the matzah in its form, its proper form. The spoiled nefesh needs the spoiled dough. That's what's appropriate for it. Okay, now question.
Totally spiritual. Isn't that Yom Kippur? You don't eat at all. Wouldn't a totally spiritual being not need matzah, not need anything?
Okay. That's a fair question. The question is, 1 minute, if we're talking total spiritual, then we would just skip food entirely. You're right. So if we just want to present it simply, we would say matzah is that step toward pure spirituality. But it's really deeper than that. It's really deeper than that. It's that also on the spiritual level, there's such a thing as food. Meaning what? Man, for example, eating man, I'm not sure about the statement I'm about to make, but I want to bring out the idea because the concept is true, may be at even a higher level than not eating at all. Lechem abrim ish. Man contains a spirituality that the malachim are nourished by. Right? So I don't know exactly how this works. If we were to be totally spiritual, we wouldn't eat at all, but we would be getting a certain level of spiritual nourishment, which would come in some sort of refined element of the month. Matzah is on that spectrum. Matzah is bridging somewhere between your roll and man. In fact, that's what Chazal say, that the matzah that they brought out of Mitzrayim, tam man hayo, it carried the flavor of man. Meaning that matzah is more equipped and appropriate for the spirit, our spirituality, our spiritual level. Now, Ramchal says, we're not told to eat this all year because we are meant to be material beings operating in a physical year. In this sense, it is kind of like Yom Kippur. We step out to a certain higher level of ourselves for one day, but we can't do that all the time. Eating matzah on Pesach is the same idea in that sense. We are now telling ourselves that at the moment that we're being taken as the Am Hashem, we're being introduced. You look at yourself in a mirror and you see body. You see 5 foot whatever of flesh and blood. And we think it begins and ends there, but we're told, no, that's not the real you. The real you is something that very, very much transcends that body. The real you is something that's really makes its way into the spiritual spheres. That's the neshama. And that's what we say, the families of the earth, we call them Mishpechay kin of the earth. Kin of the earth. Why? Because the soil comes up from the earth, constitutes the person, and then when the person dies, it just goes back down, and that's the end of the story. Whereas with us, it's not like that. You are a neshama radiating from above, and you have a case. When you look in the mirror, you're seeing the case of your neshama. But the true you is at higher level. On Pesach, we're being introduced to this. When we were taken as the Am Hashem, that's when we actually got the Beseira. I want you to let me introduce yourself. Like we discussed last week, Hashem was saying, let me introduce you to me, right? But there's another element of it. Now that you are the Am Hashem, let me introduce you to you. It's a different you. You are a much higher being. And I'm going to put you through that experience that you're not going to be able to really maintain throughout the year, because here in this world, you will be operating as a body. You will be operating as a physical being. But right now, I'm introducing you in an intense way to your higher status, to the truth of who you are. And this is expressed in a number of ways. It's expressed through the matzah, which is the food of the spiritual being. It's the food of the spiritual being. Right now, I'm more relating to my neshama than to my body. My body will get its role after Pesach. If your minig is pizza on, let's say, Yom Tov, it'll be then. If you already reached the conclusion that it's not worth the wait to get the doughy pizza that they couldn't bake well, so you'll wait 2 more days. Well, whatever the case is, yes, your experiences as a body, and that's how you'll be living throughout the year. But what's that? So why is it called Lechem Oni? Okay, let's put that off for a minute. Big question. Okay, so now. It is also ties in with the Korban Pesach. This we've said other years, but let's just make the point briefly now. You know what was one of the most shocking elements of the Korban Pesach? Korban Pesach contained two shocking elements. First, this was a shocking element that made more sense. Slaughter the lamb. The lamb was the revered icon in Mitzrayim. And it was both dangerous. But not only dangerous, many Jews found it hard to do because they were living in the Egyptian mentality and reality and value system. That's like going ahead and like just vomiting on something sacred. How could you slaughter a lamb? Part of what Hashem was doing in the Korban Pesach, he was putting them through two rigorous experiences, both in the fact that throw all caution to the wind and put your eggs in my basket. If you've been watching the Makis well enough and internalizing the lesson, here's the exam. Are you ready to put all your eggs in my basket at this point and stick out your neck, trusting that I'll be there for you. But on the next level, the Korban Pesach was expressing, Hashem says, I want to see if you're ready to step out into my value system. You grew up in Mitzrayim. You grew up admiring their culture. For you, the lamb is one of the most sacred and beautiful, etc. Slaughtering the lamb is the most despicable thing you can do, but not in my value system. Are you capable, after everything you've seen, of making that abrupt switch from the universal, from the national, from the outside value system to mine? Those are the two challenges that the Korban Pesach imposed on the Jewish people. But there was another shocking element to the Korban Pesach, and that was the Bnei Yisrael. Yes, they were in a state where they were able to tell Hashem, we'll do whatever it is. We will sacrifice. We will slaughter that lamb. We will throw all caution to the wind. We're capable of smashing that previous value system that used to be so dear to me. I want your value system. But now what do you want us to do with it? Okay, we're going to do it. What should we do with it? And here came a shocking answer. I want you to eat it. Now we're used to the idea by now. We're used to the idea of eating karbanos. We have to appreciate that this was the first time in history that a karban was eaten. Because if you think about it, it really is counterintuitive. What is a karban? You're bringing a karban, a sacrifice to Hashem. This is dedication to Hashem, right? So what business do you have in sitting down and eating it? Up till then, karbanos were ayla. Offer a karban, the appropriate thing to do is you burn it up entirely to Hashem. You know what Hashem was saying here? He was conveying another fundamental message. And he was saying, that's right, that's my food. You now are my children, and you're going to be eating off my plate. That was the experience of the Korban Pesach. This was all part of initiating them into that new status of B'nai Kel Chai. You climb up on my lap. Only the child can do this. A best friend can't do that. Right? The minister of the king can't do that. But to climb up and start eating off my plate, that's what I want you doing. We're eating off Hashem's plate. We're eating off Hashem's table. In both of these ways, Hashem was initiating us to the significance of what it means, of what the significance of Yetzias Mitzrayim really is. I'm taking you to me. We are now family. You are something much bigger than the body you know. You're going to be eating bread that transcends the physical world. You're going to be eating my karban with me because this is who you are now. And that's part of what I want you to internalize. Then you have to continue operating in the physical world. Now, why is it called Lechem Oivim? Why is it called poor man's bread? So there's, we'll throw out three explanations of that. And I'll start with the most novel. And that's the Rashba, who says, he goes with such a twist, and he says, Lechem Oini has nothing to do with the nature of the matzah. It's called Lechem Oini for entirely different, for other reasons. First of all, it's Lechem Oini in the sense that you're not allowed to mix in fruit juice. Fruit juice is called Matzah Ashira, right? So Lechem Oini is not the fact that it's just baked without becoming chametz. That's not the Lechem Oini of it. On the contrary, that's much higher quality, that's majesty, etc. Lechem Oini is just the fact that it's not Matzah Ashira, that you don't mix in fruit juice, that's all. And there's another aspect, we're supposed to break it. Right? We break the matzah, we eat a broken slice at the Torah say, why? Because that's how poor people eat. It could have been a challah, it could have been something else. The broken bread is what we call Lechem Oini. Not because it's matzah. Following me?
No.
It's not mitzah the matzah, it's mitzah that it's broken. That it's broken and it doesn't have other ingredients. But the fact that it's not chametz, that the term Oini is not appropriate for that. We're not applying the term Oini there. That's the Rashba in a very novel take here. But other things are said. Other things are said. If you want to take what we'll maybe call the most basic approach, is that the matzah represents both sides of the coin. I'm not sure if we touched on this last week. That it was both the bread we ate as aniyim, afflicted, as slaves. In that sense, it's lechem oni. But it was also the lechem of the geula. I think we did talk about that last week, right? The two sides of the coin. But that's another reason why it might be called lechem oini. Right? That it was lechem oini, but now it's not anymore. Okay, so we were kind of calling in that sense, kind of like the maror zecher to the avdus, but not anymore. Another explanation is given by the Maharal, who also goes with this understanding that the matzah is something that's just above the material. And he says something I think we spoke about over the years, but he develops a very profound idea here. He says, essentially, oini, as in poverty, is synonymous with freedom. What on earth does that mean? But first, we'll leave it as a riddle. It's often how the Maharal operates. And therefore, he says, matzah is lechem oini because it lacks it's poor of, it doesn't have the added ingredients, it doesn't have sugar, it doesn't have chocolate, it doesn't have wine, fruit juice, and also it's not left to rise. It's poor bread, and that's why it's liberty, that's why it's freedom. What on earth does that mean? So what that means is, I'll illustrate. It's really a long discussion, which deserves a whole separate shiur. But I'll illustrate it now in a simple way. There's two reasons a person might be poor. A person might be poor because he can't afford anymore. That's usually why people are poor. Can't afford anymore. He's lacking it. He's lacking it. And that person, that universal concept of poverty does not parallel freedom. But then there's the person who's poor for a different reason. And we'll illustrate it in two ways. First of all, let's say you walk into somebody's house, see a shelf lined with medications, very expensive medication. You understand that if there's all these medications on the shelf, this person must have means in some kind of way, right? Then you walk into somebody else's house, they don't have any of these medications. And you ask them, why don't you have that? Is it that you can't afford it? I don't know if I could afford it, and I haven't tried to work it out in the budget, but I don't need it. I don't need it, and therefore I don't have it. It also could be that I can't afford it, but I don't need it. It's not relevant. So now let's take it to the next level. This is a story that they said about the stipler. The stipler was in Shiduchim. He was being offered all kinds of prospective shidduchim, very, very wealthy shidduchim. People were after him, and there were very wealthy people who wanted him to marry their daughter, and they said, I'm going to provide you with lavish support for the rest of your life, for 20 years. He's getting very, very lavish offers. And then another offer came up, a little bit of a different style, of a girl who was an absolute pauper. She was an orphaness, and she was destitute. The mother, the mother, and nothing. Her character checked out, her dedication to Torah checked out. And the stipler said, I prefer that shidduch so that I should have the means to sit and learn. So what does that mean? All the other shidduchim are offering you the means to sit and learn. So the stipler said, no. He said, let's say I marry the daughter of a multimillionaire who's going to provide for me his whole life. But that's good as long as he still has the money. What happens if he falls? And Lamaisa, my learning is going to depend on his money. I'm going to be stuck. But he said, if I marry a girl who's dedicated to Torah, but grew up with nothing such that she needs nothing in order to live, my future is guaranteed. Right? I am now free to learn for the rest of my life because we won't need anything. This is what the Maharal means when he says, this kind of poverty actually equals freedom. I'm not fettered by needs. I don't have it because I don't need it. And the person, and we do know of this is not something that we necessarily celebrate, but the concept, let's say for example, I think it was Plato, was an absolute pauper. Was a brilliant man of his time, one of the greatest teachers of his time in the outside world. He was a pauper on principle because he felt that the pursuit and the involvement with money making, etc., would cloud his ability to be able to really that pursuit of philosophy of understanding depth, etc. So be clouded by different things. He wanted to be free to gain what he really wanted out of life. He didn't want to be fettered by various material needs. In this sense, is what the Maharal says, Oini, poverty, not as in lacking, but poverty as in a bare life, because I don't need any of these trappings. That's what equals true freedom, because then you're not fettered, you're not encumbered by all kinds of different needs that can hold you back and get in your way. It's in this sense, the Maharal says, that we call it Lechem Oini, that very unique strain of Oini, not the general Oini, which is synonymous with lack. This is Oini that's not lack. This is having nothing because I don't need it. And this is actually representative of a life of Ruchnius. The real life of Ruchnius is a life where I don't need any external conditions in order to achieve what I want. Ruchnius, the opportunity is always there. There's always how to grow from whatever situation it is.
Like all who are hungry should join our Seder. So I always thought, well, that's why they call it, it's for these people who are lacking, that that's why you serve matzah for the you because you're inviting a need to your Seder.
I never heard that explanation. I don't know if that's why we call it that, because on the contrary, why not offer them rich bread? But I don't know. It's definitely possible that there is such an explanation. But yes, there will be many more explanations than I can possibly read in my life. But yeah.
The concept I've heard, and I'm confused on it, but that's why I'm asking you. That in the first Pesach, so Leil Seder, the Jews were commanded to make matzah, but
Right.
they weren't in a rush at that point, right?
Right.
But they ate matzah with their Korban Pesach.
Right. They were they technically didn't need to rush in order to make the monster. That's right. That's right.
And it was commanded of them,
Right.
they were rushing up. That we say the matzah, you always talk about the matzah, you didn't have come to rise up.
Right,
Yeah,
right.
let's discuss that
Yeah.
last week.
So we
Right.
touched on
Okay.
that. We touched on that last week. Was the recording already sent out? We
Yeah, I
did.
haven't had
We
him.
touched on that last week, but yeah, there's a lot of profundity there. Okay.